The Masterclass podcast is made on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri, Woiwurrung and Bunurong people. We recognise First Nations people as the original owners and custodians of the lands and waterways across the Australian continent. We pay our respects to elders past and present. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
The thing that I love about audio is that I find it's really intimate. And I think you can tell so much by someone's voice.
I love that sense of being able to transport someone, but how do you do that?
You grab them with the curiosity, I think. You just have to really hook someone in so they want to find out what's going on. You want to be able to record the sound because I know that there are people that listen to certain ABC programs who, if you have the wrong bird sound for that area, they will call and they will tell you. Hi, I'm Jo Lauder. I'm a reporter for Triple J's Hack program, and I'm also the host of the ABC podcasts Who's Gonna Save Us and Saving the Franklin. In this episode, I'm gonna give you a masterclass in planning an audio story.
Hello and welcome to Season 3 of the Masterclass podcast. I'm Louisa Lim and I teach audio journalism and podcasting at the University of Melbourne. Every episode, we're speaking to a master of journalism to talk about one aspect of their work. Today, we're hearing from ABC journalist Jo Lauder. Jo, you're doing so much work with audio. I mean, what is it that you can do with audio that you can't do with a text story?
The thing that I love about audio is that I find it's really intimate, and I find that it's intimate in a way that you can also come to it, unlike with video, for example, or other visual storytelling, without as many preconceptions about a person. And I think you can tell so much by someone's voice, but also it's a really good way, not just with people's voice, but as we'll talk about, using the audio that you get when you go on location, using really good soundscapes, using music in a really intentional way. I think you can really transport people to certain places. And so it's not that you can't do that with writing. I think it's just there's so many creative ways that you can do it with audio.
I love that sense of being able to transport someone, but how do you do that? What are the ingredients that you look for when you're thinking about how to turn a story into a really good audio story?
I think sense of place is a really big one. When I'm working with Hack, and so a lot of the time it's news and current affairs or just what's going on. I'm based in Melbourne, so a lot of the time what's going on in Melbourne. And I often read about it, say, online or in the paper, say if it's a certain research study or something like that, or there's some kind of, I don't know, maybe protest or anything basically that sparks my interest, I instantly think about how I can get out and speak to the people who are directly involved in that and where I would speak to them. If you can meet people where this is happening, that's how you create that sense. So that's probably the first step. By transporting the audience there, a lot of the time it's just me literally going there and meeting people where they are in their lives and doing it alongside them for a while to try and capture that moment.
I think we've got a beautiful example of your work that really illustrates that. It's about a gaming company that's doing work on space. I mean, maybe we'll play that clip and then you can talk about how you put that together.
Wow. Okay. So in front of me, I can just see like a door and some controls and my hands. Wow. And now using my hand controls, I'm kind of climbing up a ladder. Oh my gosh.
What you're hearing is me gearing up for my very first spacewalk to fix a leak on the outside of the International Space Station. I can hear ground control in my ear. I can hear my own breathing.
I'm here, Charlie. Can you hear me?
All right, I hear you, Anna. Internal comms are still functional.
And I'm using handles to pull and manoeuvre myself around, just like astronauts do.
This is incredible. It looks so much closer than I expected.
Yeah, so what we found was, and this is the scale, by the way, so what we've actually found is that the International Space Station is actually a lot closer than people think.
My name is Emre Deniz. I am a director at Opaque Space, and I was previously the lead game designer and project manager of Earthlight as well.
The visuals in the virtual reality game Earthlight are incredible. When I turn my head, I can see the massive metal hunk of the space station in all directions, and below me, is Earth. It's in such incredible detail that I can see small islands, I can see the different blues of the ocean and the weather patterns on the surface.
So, I mean, that was basically in an office somewhere in Melbourne, was it?
Yeah, I think as I go on to say, I'm like, oh, I take the headset off and I'm just surrounded by whiteboards and some desks and it's very uninspiring. It was so nice hearing that because I think that's like 5 years old. That was the perfect example. There was something that was in the paper about this gaming company. They developed a VR console game where you go on a spacewalk on the space station and you get to do like repair work on the space station. And NASA contacted them and they were like, this is a great idea. Can we actually use this to train our astronauts before they go up there? Because it's really interactive. And so I read about it and I was like, cool, this would be really fun to try. And I remember the photo of me as well. I'm basically like awkwardly like trying to do it and hold a microphone. That's one thing about radio or audio. It's so unglamorous a lot of the time when you're trying to record these moments that probably sound good. So what you can hear there is that's my first time experiencing it. And that's why I think if you're doing it, you also get the authentic reactions, or if you can record someone else, you know, maybe like, whoa, my hands, I'm holding the controllers. I also got access to the audio files of some of the soundtracks of the game. That's what I was hearing in the headset, but being able to do that for the audience and use some of that. Also the music choice, music, you can overcook it a lot of the time, but I think what I went for there, which I remember, and I love doing space stories because you can make it sound so cool, is this sense of expanse and airiness and like sparkliness almost, I would describe it. They kind of were all the elements that went in there. And then as you'll hear, introducing the guest that comes in and then speaking to them about how it came about.
We've talked a lot in text about leads, you know, the opening of a story, the first line is the most important thing. I mean, how do you approach the opening of an audio piece? Should it be, you know, your best bit of audio? Well, here it's kind of a little bit confusing almost. We don't really understand what's happening. Talk us through how you make the decision about what to use at the start of your pieces.
I think it does depend on what the story is. If it's a political story, that might be a bit of a different approach. Or if it's a really tight story in terms of sometimes with Hack, it might be like 2.5, 3 minutes. Then I'd front load it with a really clear, concise and attention-grabbing bit of audio. I prefer, and I know there's different schools around this, but I prefer not to have the reporter as the first grab. So it's usually some talent or a bit of audio from out in the field. I will say as well, when it goes to air, there's usually a 4-line introduction as well. So you have a little bit of a sense of what the story is going to be. But I think you're totally right. We don't quite know what's going on. I quite enjoy doing that because I think there's a lot of curiosity and there's a bit of a like, huh? Like what is happening? She can see her hands. What's so intriguing about that? And so then you can draw them in that way and then elaborate a bit more and describe what's going on around you and kind of build on that. You grab them with the curiosity, I think, in the first instance.
So people often talk about the lead as being the shop window, but for audio, it's the same kind of thing. You have to grab someone's attention. It's got to be exciting, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you can grab them, yeah, without them telling them everything in the first line. I think that's the difference between traditional news writing or like, you know, the inverted pyramid of a newspaper where you have to like pack as much into the first paragraph as possible. I think with this, which is more, a lot of the time it's more feature inspired, or you can think of it like a feature story. You just have to grab them with some kind of curiosity or what the hell moment or intrigue, or just sometimes a really compelling person being really honest or having a lot of emotion in their voice. Again, that might be your best bit of tape, but you just have to really hook someone in so they want to find out what's going on.
And let's talk about the interviewees. Do you pre-interview them beforehand? I mean, do you have a chat before you put them on tape? Do you know what they're going to say, or does that take away from the sort of discovery and excitement?
A little bit of both. I always, wherever possible, pre-interview, just so you can prepare for your interview and you know what to ask them and you have a sense of their relationship to the story, what they find most interesting about it. But at the same time, there is this moment I feel a lot of the time when you're pre-interviewing, you're like, I don't want you to tell me the whole thing because the first time you tell me will be the best time probably. And I've had that happen so many times, and especially with longer form, like with the podcast I made, Saving the Franklin, because that was a more historical narrative one. So we really wanted to find out where people were 40 years ago, when these major events in that story, what they remembered about that. But then when it came to getting them to retell it, sometimes people, they know that you already know what's happening. So they're like, oh, you know, as I told you. And you're like, no, no, tell me again the first time. Or they say a really great line the first time in the pre-interview, and you keep asking them similar questions to try and get them to repeat it in the same way. You're like, but what about the smell, remember? Or whatever it was that really like grabbed your attention. But yeah, I would say always pre-interview, you get a good sense of the person, you get a good sense of even just how comfortable they feel speaking to a journalist. I think it helps you better prepare. I always go in with questions. I deviate a lot of the time from them, but I think it helps to prepare for that and know where they're going to fit into your story before you go out. Otherwise, you can end up with just, you do the interview and you come back and you have a lot of stuff that doesn't actually fit into your structure as well.
I think we have a clip of Saving the Franklin. Maybe we'll just have a little listen to that.
Until you see it, it's hard to appreciate the otherworldliness of the landscape. These trees that are overhanging the river. There's no shoreline, there are just a wall of trees that literally dip into the river around me. I'm on the west coast of Tasmania, a little island south of Australia. It's taken hours to get here. We've driven over mountains and through forests. After getting on a boat and crossing a harbour, we're now motoring up towards a place called the Franklin River. As I look around, I'm in awe. It's an overcast day. It's been raining earlier. It's stopped now. But there's this mist hanging in the pockets of the trees and slowly lifting, and it gives us this majestic feel. I'm here to retrace the route that thousands of people my age took back in 1982 as part of Australia's biggest environmental protest. They joined a blockade in this forest, and about 1,400 were arrested for it. Up higher, you've got this mist hanging over the top tree lines, and it just gives it all this kind of ethereal quality. And you can see why 40 years ago, this landscape motivated so many people to protect it.
So you use sound so beautifully there. Talk us through that process.
I will say I was very, very lucky to work with a sound engineer for that podcast, John Jacobs. He's phenomenal and it really brings the story to life. I love hearing it because obviously I went there, I was on the boat, but listening back to it, it evokes all the senses, like the water lapping. And yet we knew that part of southwest Tasmania, this is where the Franklin blockade was and it's kind of where a lot of the story is centered. And as I say in that intro, that landscape inspired so many people to go to really extreme measures to protect it. And we really wanted from the outset to try and capture that place. And we went to it quite late in the reporting trip. So I'd spoken to so many people about it. As part of the interview, I would get everybody to describe what they recalled about the landscape or they felt when they were there and really, really paint a strong sense. So I felt like I knew what I was expecting. And still, it blew me away. It absolutely blew me away. And so we're trying to capture that as much as possible through audio. And so when we were there, and I was with another producer, Pia Wersu, as well, who I worked with on the podcast. And yeah, we both crouched down by the water. We had microphones so really, really close to the river. So you have that close sound of the river. Recorded the boat as well, even though when we were on the boat, we're like, this is really noisy. Like, this isn't probably going to be good audio, but what the hell, we'll record the whole thing because there might be that one line when we'll say, we're on a boat. And so we wanted to have that. And so we were just recording as much as possible. We made sure we tried to capture the birds in the area as well and go out at dawn and try and get some of the sounds of the surrounding forest in that region as well. Because as much as possible, I think for stories like that, which are also very geographically specific, you want to be able to record the sound because I know that there are people that listen to certain ABC programs who, if you have the wrong bird sound for that area, they will call and they will tell you. And one tip I found, someone else told me this that I use a lot when you're recording. They were saying, if you're trying to record, say, for example, the river, record it at different distances as well. So you record up really, really close. You might record when you're walking, you know, from where we parked the car, we recorded at different intervals down there. And a lot of the time we didn't use any of that, but it's good to just have it there so you know you've got it there. And record, again, like the last story with the spacewalk. record your response, your kind of initial reaction to where you are as well, because I think that's a good way to transport the listener to where you are, because you're seeing it for the first time with fresh eyes and you want to tell them what that's like. And it can feel awkward as well when you're standing there narrating. I've had so many times where I'm at a certain event and I'm just like describing what I'm looking at or narrating how I feel in that moment, and people are like, what is that person doing? But it comes across really well for audio.
It is good to have no sense of shame.
Yeah.
In audio.
Yeah, you definitely, yeah, you do have to get over that.
I mean, let's talk about that planning, that structure. Say, you know, when you work for Triple J Hack and you're assigned a story, you have, say, 3 minutes. How do you decide whether you're going to do just an interview with someone or more of a package with music or whatever? How do you make that call?
So each morning as a team, we have an editorial meeting and we basically decide what we think are the most important stories of the day. We all pitch them, and then it's often looking at the balance as well across the whole show to make sure that there is not just light and shade, but just tonally it's striking the right balance, and transitions from one story to another aren't too jarring, I think, sometimes as well. And then it's a mix of if we think there is a lot to explain or a lot of context to give, say, before an interview. So we might assign a package to a reporter. It's like, there's a lot of voices out there. There's a lot of different perspectives on this. The package is there to kind of set up, and then there will be an interview with an expert or a politician or someone off the back. Or if we think one person can do a really good job of explaining it and giving all the context. And it is a balance as well in terms of just a mix of the audio. So we do have some reporter packages and some just straight up interviews. So sometimes if the whole show is all interviews, we try not to do that too much, because I think it does give it a different element if you have packages. And then if you're assigned a package, it comes down to, I guess, thinking about who the main voices are in the story. Often it's good, yeah, to speak to some kind of academic expert. There might be, if it's a political one, the different political voices. If you can get a case study, again, it's like as much as possible trying to go out there and meet them face to face and speak to them about their experience. And so you just have to plan and try and get a few different voices. And then I often just write in dot points how I'm going to step through. I initially will find who I'm speaking to. I don't do much scripting or anything before I do the interviews. Yeah, I might have a quick chat to someone. If it's a same day one, have a pre-interview, do the interviews with them, whether or not I go out, I come back. I cut the best bits. I cut all my grabs. And then I think about the dot point structure of how am I going to get from A to B to C? Like in my mind, what is the logical way? And it's not always chronological. Sometimes it is, but sometimes, like I said, it's the best bit of audio at the top, or there's curiosity and you're like, that's this person and here's the context. The second beat might be giving the background, and then you come back to reaction. And so it does kind of depend on what the story is about, but I try and think about that. I do the dot points, how I'm going to structure it, how I'm going to tell it, how am I going to get from A to B to C, and then I fill it out and script it around the grabs. And I, yeah, just try and put the best grabs in there.
We are standing at the front of the Arts Centre in Melbourne, and on Joe's request, we are looking up at the Arts Spire. The same art spire that I climbed and hung a banner off maybe a month ago. My name's Brad Homewood. I'm a member of Extinction Rebellion Victoria and a very dedicated climate activist.
I'm standing with Brad on the lawn next to the Melbourne Arts Centre, and we're looking up at the spire. Picture it like a mini Eiffel Tower. Brad's been arrested 12 times since 2019. That's when he joined Extinction Rebellion. His biggest stunt recently was right where we are.
Climbed up in the dark to that apex of the triangle, and I waited there for about 45 minutes for the sun to come up and the lights to go off, because there's lights all over that grid and I didn't want to start hanging the banner just in case.
Fire danger?
Yeah, I just wanted to play it safe, yeah. I didn't want anything to catch a light. I've got a lot of climbing experience. I've been trained up really well and we didn't take any risks at all.
How did you feel about how it turned out and the response that you got?
We're very happy. We're pretty sure that we would get a lot of media, and we did. And yeah, it was basically a publicity stunt.
He's a really great storyteller. One of the biggest problems I had with that story was I only had a couple of minutes. I spoke to Brad for about 45 minutes, and there was so much that I wanted to use. And I find especially coming from a long form podcast, going back to Hack, where I was like, what do you mean 3-4 minutes? like, you know, just him describing, you know, where he was climbing up the spire. I was like, that, you know, we had about 10 minutes worth. And so that comes down to, I guess, finding the very best bits and then doing some intentional scripting around it where you can kind of help the story along. But yeah, so I had a bit of a pre-interview chat with him, but that was one where I was going to go to his place to interview him. And I was like, hey, this is kind of annoying, but it's for audio. It'll sound really great if we go to where the protest was, so you can just tell me how it happened. And it was great. He obviously agreed to do it, which is probably, well, it was a bit inconvenient for him for that 1 minute of radio to just say, oh, we're here on Joe's request and we're looking at the art center. But because of that, I mean, I think it's more engaging. And like you said, you've got to be a bit shameless, but also sometimes I say to people, I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm going to be a bit annoying. And I like just blame it on the medium. But I'm like, it's so much better if, again, you can go to the place with the person. That was a really good example of that. Also, when you're out there with someone or you've got your talent, I really like, as well as you describing everything and kind of doing all of that, often I get there a little bit earlier so I can do all of that awkward, embarrassing stuff. Or once they leave, just narrate what's going on. But getting people to tell you what they're looking at or what they see or what their interactions are with the space, I think is also really good because you have it in their voice. And so I would have said, this is for radio, Brad. Can you just describe what we're looking at? Can you tell me about it? Do you want to just like talk me through how it all played out? And then obviously I had to cut lots and lots and lots of that. But it's really good having it there because, again, it takes the listener there and it's more engaging than just hearing him being like, oh, yeah, I was arrested last week.
Maybe you could talk through your research process as well. When does that happen and how much do you do?
Yeah, it depends on how much lead time I have. If it's a political story or something like that, if there's been a lot of coverage, reading the other coverage, it's also a really good way to get a lay of the land in terms of who you can speak to, who is out speaking about it, who has an opinion on it, what lobby groups are involved. So doing that research, sometimes just having a chat on background to certain people or experts, just so you feel a bit more confident with how you're approaching it and also, again, how you're approaching your interviews with the talent as well. But just trying to have, yeah, a good understanding of the space before you go into it.
And when you say on background, what you mean is talking to people but telling them that you're not going to use that information. Is that right?
Yeah, for certain stories, say with a lot of my climate reporting, I might call an expert in renewable energy. And if I'm going out, I'm like, I'm just trying to get my head around this. Because if it's a really technical story, sometimes you just need somebody to explain it to you so you can then communicate it really clearly.
Just to kind of sum things up, do you have 2 top tips for student journalists or people just starting out?
Yeah, I will say always be recording when you're going out in the field. You'll end up with so much stuff that you don't use. But when you come back and you're trying to tell that story, like I said, with the example with Saving the Franklin, there might be a line where you talk about being on the boat. And so it's really great as much as possible to have the sound of you being on that boat, or a really sometimes overused device, but I really like a great device is if you're going to meet someone, record yourselves when you're rocking up at the house, you know, like knocking on the door, hey, I'm Joe, nice to meet you, or driving in, I've just pulled up here, you know, just again, to bring the audience as much as possible into that place where you are and give a sense of the scene and yeah, just record as much as possible. And then the other thing I would say is just listen to lots of podcasts and audio, and you learn to listen with a critical ear, which kind of sometimes ruins podcasts for you because you're spending your whole time thinking how they make it or why they made those choices. It's quite fun. I really enjoy it. And I think you get so inspired by hearing cool ways that other people do things. And you can use them yourself if you really like a certain device they use or a way that they introduce their talent or a location they go to or whatever it is. You can use that in your own work as well.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And I think you have an activity for us.
Okay, so my activity for you is really based around that last tip, which is listen to stuff that you love and find out why you love it. I would say to you, go out, find a bit of audio, a podcast or a feature story, find something, listen to it, and then break down all the different mix of the elements that you're hearing, whether, you know, the voice track, the Atmos, the music. Think about all the different elements, why they've chosen them, what you like about them, and then you can come back and have a discussion about it.
That was Jo Lauder, an audio journalist and podcast host for the ABC. The Masterclass is produced by Dylan Bird and myself. It's edited by Dylan Bird. Sound design and post-production by John Chia. The original concept is by Anders Furs. The theme tune is by Susie Wilkins. It was partially funded by the GEM Scott Trust and is brought to you from the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne.